morning. Welcome to today's Daybreak episode. I am your main primary host, Jared Hillman. And with me, as always, Mark Hoxson, Sr.
I'm
just kidding. I threw that in there.
I love it. Well, I'm actually, you know what, Jared, you said senior. I am actually Mark Hoxson the second. So
Mark Hoxson the second. That sounds more regal.
Mark Allen Hoxson the second.
Yeah, you have to have a middle name if you're including a numeric at the end. You have to.
Yeah, I think so, right? It's like a three. It's a three plus a number.
Yeah, because it's like John Smith the third doesn't sound as good as like John Emerald Smith the third.
Yes. Well, see, and the main thing is because if you had a different middle name, you wouldn't be the second. You have to have the same middle name to be the second.
All the way. Same name all the way. Is that true?
I think so.
That's a history fact, people.
Usually, too, the second is usually like if you're a generation removed, you know, if it was your grandfather and you, but it's actually my dad. My dad just didn't want to have to call me junior. So I became second, which my grandpa turned into the tooth. So I was always Mark the Tooth growing up.
What's funny is like that was like how people maintain their legacy. And now we just start social media accounts for babies.
Yes.
Yeah. And exactly. It's like, I started an Instagram account for my child.
Yes.
And he'll just have it forever now. It's a legacy piece.
To my grandpa set up, you know, when I was born, set up one of those, you know, those life insurance policy things. That's what right. That's what the old generation used to do, right?
Yeah. Like
the Fraternal Order of Croatian whatever
right.
was where my first life insurance policy was. But now it's you know, baby James 69 yeah. at Instagram.
Yeah.
And you just go there.
Baby James Flower Child.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just lots of baby memes.
Hey, so how's the weather? What's going on down there? You're opening up soon. Well, not soon.
Yeah. So we're in the orange tier. If you're following California's colored tier system, as no one is, we're in the orange tier. So we're more open. Disneyland was allowed to open at like 15% capacity. So whatever that means.
3 million people, no problem.
Exactly. Schools are going back to, you know, in person. My daughter starts in person full time on Monday, so that'll be interesting to see her back. Hey, here's a funny thing. So at school, if you're inside the classroom in California, now you're allowed to be only 3 feet apart with a mask on, but when you're eating lunch outside, you have to be 6 feet apart.
With no mask on.
So obviously. Inside plus mask, 3 feet, outside, no mask, 6 feet.
I did see that the WHO, I was reading some publications the other day, and I did see that they did update to a meter. Social distancing was a meter now.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that must be with masks, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think as things open up, they realize there's not enough actual physical space. So they just keep reducing the amount of space you have to be away just so they can still keep people in. I don't know what they're doing. But yes, we're opening. And if things keep on where we're at, Governor Newsom, in his infinite wisdom, is opening the whole state on June 15th. There'll still be a mask requirement, but there won't be any of these like occupancy limitations or any of that kind of stuff. So June 15th, we go back to normal, supposedly.
So basically you went from like urinal line distance.
Yes.
To ATM line distance.
Yes.
Right. Cause there is a difference, right? Like there's, you know, you should be further back from someone in a urinal line. And then when you get to an ATM distance, you can move a little bit closer, but not too close. You know, you still have to allow for privacy.
Yes. You can't, it's the distance at which you cannot observe a PIN code without squinting.
That's right.
So the ATM line distance is actually based on visual acuity, but nobody ever checks my card on that. So, you know.
Well, and urinal line distance is probably based on the same thing that social distancing is droplets. You're trying to avoid droplets.
I would hope so. Yes. I would hope so.
Yeah. Okay.
No, but yeah, well, so we'll go back to fully open here soon, which is exciting for me, and you know, I'd like to see some more people out vaccinations are going well, like all that good stuff, you know.
You know what helps social distancing is a foot of snow in April. That just happened yesterday here.
That's crazy. I mean, I had my U-Haul truck moving all my stuff up there.
That's right. Yeah.
And you know, they called me from the TSA checkpoint there at the border and said, you know, as soon as you cross into Canada, there's a 4-foot wall of snow. We're gonna have to wait till it melts a little bit.
Well, great segue, because I did bring a supportive fellow Canadian. Since you bailed on me, I had to go out and reach out to other Canadians that would brave the cold. And so I'm super excited about our guest today.
Oh yeah? Jared, you've launched the show.
I did, yeah.
You've taken the alpha host position.
Yeah, you're now beta host.
And now you've brought a guest.
Am I overreaching?
I don't know. Like,
I'm pushing the power limits of a co-host position, is what you're saying.
No, I think, you know what I think? I think this show's initiative. I think is what this show's, Jared. Right. And initiative should be rewarded. And I think that the host title is going to stay. And I think, you know, maybe, you know, one out of seven openings you can do at this point, I would grant you.
I envision this like daybreak lunchroom, and on the wall is employee of the month. And every month it's been Mark up until possibly this month. It might be Jared.
Yes.
This wall of Mark's shoulders.
Yes. There was a great site called Despair Inc. where this guy did demotivators posters, but he used to do videos, and he used to have the employee of the month, and they show him in his staff meeting, and he said, "The employee of the month is again me," and he's got his picture just like that. And he also had a screw up of the month board. And he's like, you know, Dave and Tom decided to send the catalog we spent $75,000 on, instead of to the list of people who were interested in product, they sent it to all of the people who had unsubscribed from our email. And he's like, it shows this board and it says, "You screwed up. Don't let it happen again." And the people's pictures are all on the board. There you go. You won't be there anymore, Jared.
I like it.
So can you text me quickly?
Of course I can.
Phone number. Who am I calling?
You're calling Jody Sagan. He's from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, which is a mouthful.
Saskatoon.
Saskatoon. They're like the hip, cool version of Regina.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had to pick between the two, I'm going to Saskatoon.
Right. That's all I know. Most tourists, most people would.
I just like the alliteration. Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. I can remember it, right?
They even have their own berries.
See, look at that. Cheese, milk, Saskatoons, whatever those are. All right. So here we go. I wonder what the phone sounds like in Saskatoon. That's going to be the mystery of the show. I'm dialing now. Jody, are you there?
I'm here. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Jared had me call you. Jared is here with me. I know we've never met before, but Jared told me that he had invited you to the show. So thanks for coming on.
He said you'd be calling. He warned me.
Yes. Well, good. Well, thanks for picking up. Jared, introduce us to why you invited Jody on the show.
Yeah. So Jody Sagan is the Director of Technology Experience and Enablement at WBM, which is a Saskatchewan-based company throughout Western Canada. Is that correct, Jody?
That is correct. Yes, we are a managed services organization. We are based in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, but we consider ourselves a Western Canadian company for sure. Yeah.
Right. And so I guess with a title like Technology Experience and Enablement, what would you say you do here, Jody? What would you say that job entails?
Oh my goodness, that's a good question. You know, I do find myself explaining it a little bit. So I'm an individual who's worked in an IT company for 17 years who basically knows nothing about IT. I don't have an IT background, right? And my strength was always people and trying to understand people and relationships with people. And obviously 17 years in an IT company, I picked up a few things along the way, but that was never my background. And so my focus came to be understanding how people used technology and how technology could help people. And so really it was about what they were doing. Let's just put all that tech stuff aside for a second. Let's have a conversation, find out who you are, what you do. And, you know, if there's something that we can do to help you, let me go research that. You don't have to Google it. We're the experts here. We'll come back to you. And it all just came about the experience that they went through and making them more collaborative, more productive, more efficient, but getting more enjoyment from their job, connecting with other people. Those are the kind of things that we get excited about. So that, I think, summarizes, I didn't write it down, but that I think would summarize what we do on the technology experience team.
And so you have a team that helps you do that.
I have an awesome team that helps me do that. Yeah, so again, right across Western Canada. But the people on my team are largely the same background as me. I would say a lot of them are more technical, but none of us have technical training. So I always wanted to create a team that was similar to the one I came from. When I grew up, let's say, in my career at WBM, our team all had very different personalities. We just connected really well, though, and it just seemed to fit. And that's the way with my team as well. Everybody has their strengths. I have seen them do some really amazing things, but none of them have a technical background. So when I get a chance to see what they're doing and some of the experiences and some of the ways that they're connecting with our client community, I'm truly amazed at what we're able to do. It's been really, really interesting. This part of the business has only been formalized for the last 3.5 years. So that was part of my journey in my career. The Brett and Joanne and Bob, the partners in WBM, you know, believed in me that we could put something together here when it came to that experience. We just saw that there was an opportunity here. And it's been an amazing, you know, journey through this as just getting to understand how people work. We had been doing this as an organization. Like I said, it's a formalization, but we had always been doing this informally. There's a pattern of success there, largely through a different business unit that we had in print. It's amazing. If you go and talk to people about their printers, how much you can learn about a business, right? Because you start to see where information is coming from and where it's going and what applications they're using to get things done and what their challenges are and why they hate this machine, but why they like that machine. And when you put it all together, you start to realize like, wow, I just asked people about their printers, but I know so much about this company. And then you can get all sorts of amazing outcomes, like satisfaction from the people who get these new machines, but you see cost efficiencies and productivity efficiencies and reduction in environmental impact. And you're like, wow, you know, all I did was ask about their printers. And I always kind of thought like, I think there's more. What if we asked them about something other than their printers, right? And sure enough, there's more to be had there. I've just been having so much fun. And again, the team is fantastic.
Jared, something you said, Jody, when you say you're not from a technical background, very interesting to me, because I was a kid who wanted to be a veterinarian. I went to go into school for zoology. I thought I was going to work for a game and fish department or for a zoo. And I was always, you know, I loved people. I loved animal behavior. I loved those type of things as well. People will ask me many times, like I do a lot of writing and things like that. And people ask me where I came up with something or where I learned something. And for a long time, I guess I didn't realize that really where I learned it was just observation over 16 years as a salesperson in AV. You know, or I guess now it's, for me, I started in 2002, so it's 19 years in AV is where I've learned most of that. Looking at your LinkedIn, which Jared and I usually do, we snoop through your LinkedIn while you're here, by the way, seeing that you've been at WBM and you were there, you were 16 years in the account manager role. So you saying, you know, you've just formalized this, but do you think that 16 years of just being intimately involved with clients is where, you know, like this huge database of of information came from, where you were able to look at that, look at trends, and then formalize something internally.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. As an account manager, we're responsible for the relationship, right? So it was our job not to know all of the technology. It wasn't our job to know the ins and outs of all the things that we could do. We had specialists for that. Our job was to know the client, right? So yeah. Our job was to know what makes you successful. Where are your challenges? What are your goals? How do we make sure that you're achieving those, right? How do we make it fun? How do we make it easy for you, Mr. or Mrs. Client, to deal and work with WBM? You know, it's sometimes we just kind of called ourselves a technology concierge. We just want to make everything easy for you, right? And it was incredibly impactful, because a lot of times what I'd see is when there was challenges, so many times it had actually had nothing to do with technology that wasn't working. And that sometimes was the frustrating part, right? Because we get calls from CIOs, CFOs, people in leadership positions saying, hey, we're getting tons of, you know, we're getting a bunch of complaints. I worked and specialized in healthcare, right? So if you've got a floor in a hospital and you've got nurses who are complaining about things, like, that's a serious thing. And when you went and actually went there, right? So I'm not observing from afar, but hey, okay, I'm driving to the hospital, I'm going to the nursing floor, and you started talking to nurses, you started to realize, like, oh, okay, this technology, it's not that it's not working. In fact, it's working, but nobody's explained it. There's something broken in the process here, where we haven't really enabled them to understand, A, what's in it for them, right? Why is this technology going to be better for them? Hey, this should be good news. You just got a brand new whatever. In this case, it was like printers and multifunction devices, but you just got a brand new one, right? This should work so much better. But what we realized is, like, there was things that they weren't warned about. Maybe they didn't realize that we were coming. It wasn't on their calendar. It just hadn't been communicated properly. Maybe there's a couple things that they needed to get ready for, like, hey, have some information for us, you know, your username and password that you gotta type in here just one time, but make sure you bring it with you if you've forgotten it. And we realized, like, hey, this isn't a problem with technology. This is just us being able to communicate with these people, in this case, these nurses, that we need to do this. And I learned this as an account manager. And that was kind of the big thing. I can think of a specific example at a hospital working with nurses where I just realized, wow, you know, this is amazing. Because once we actually smoothed out that process, we didn't fix anything on the technology side. We actually didn't have to touch it at all. Once we smoothed out that process, worked with people, understood what actually made them successful, and helped them realize, like, hey, this new machine will give you, you're going to be able to get faxes from anywhere. You know, they're still using fax at the time, or you can pull a print job no matter where you are in the hospital. And they're like, we had so many emails coming in from us afterwards, just like, or not coming to us, actually going to the CIO, right? Which is even better, because that's your client. That's the one you want to make a hero. And he was just blown away, because he was getting, nurse managers saying, this technology is fantastic. And we didn't change the technology. We changed how we approach the people side of things. So that was a big aha moment for me, I guess, is like that account manager role, relationships, people, and we can actually make technology and the experience and people's jobs, we can, you know, affect their lives by helping them understand what's in it for them and why they would want to use this new technology. It's a bit of a disruption, right? But just stick with us, trust us. We know that this is going to be good for you, and here's why. Give us 10 minutes and we'll walk you through it. And on the other side of that, people were really happy. It was a fantastic experience. Not at the beginning, but it all ended well.
No, that's awesome. I'm a big fan of that. I've been thinking more and more, you know, obviously in any technology business, I'm sure Jared has this too. I mean, if without proper adoption, like, the technology always falls flat. But so many times we get focused on fulfilling the scope of work and the bill of materials and getting a sign off and leaving site, right? And we're not focused on what happens on that day two, day 30 type, you know, review of how are people using it? How do you like it? How are things moving forward? And I love that idea of going to site. I always say, take the tour, you know, walk the office. When you're talking about the copy machine thing, the same thing. Like, and I used to ask people all the time, in meetings, you know, So we've just had this big conversation about what you do and what we do. If there was anything you need help with, even if you think I don't provide it, like, what is that? What's your biggest challenge in this business? Like, I used to ask people that all the time just to see where it led, because, you know, the more you know about where people have challenges, the maybe, you know, the better you have to connect some dots or to make sure something's going to work the right way.
I think one of the things I've noticed, one of the things I've realized with us trying to implement, like, we are constantly working on like our after install training, right? I think one of the things that I've learned, and this actually came from, we brought my wife started working with our company almost a year ago, and she was a former teacher and educator, and then, but not tech savvy at all. Had an idea, had a concept, but she implemented, like, she taught our team how to actually put together a training program that actually produced outcomes. Like, how do you evaluate those outcomes? How do you evaluate the progress during the training to make sure people understood what you were saying? But so between a structured method of training and kind of measuring outcome, and B, I learned that I think in our industry and in technology, even account managers that may not be, like, you know, technical, we still really take for granted how much you understand about things that most people don't. Yeah. And what seems, because even for myself, being quite technical, and I'm sure you are all, obviously, Mark and Jody, you will intentionally try to scale back how technical you think you are to understand someone. And then you have to go like four more levels deep because they're even less technical than that. You just take for granted that the baseline is this high and it's really this high, you know?
Yeah.
So I really had to learn that.
And I love the idea that you know, your wife being a teacher, obviously very smart, despite her questionable judgment in men. It reminds me, I wrote a piece a little while ago about potentially doing flipped classroom for training. And it's something I really want to try, but I haven't tried it yet. But, you know, this idea that, like, in an AV system, you know, what people do when they come in a meeting is they come in, they bring their computer, they bring the presentation they want to do, and they end up sharing through the system, and they're using the audio and video support in order to share. You know, I was like, you know, why don't we do like a technology kickoff party? The vendor, you know, you or me, Jared, come to the room, we give some people some basics, but their instructions are to bring, you know, like their pictures from their last vacation or a really cool song they like and that they want to share with the group. And then what you do is people rotate through in this hour and a half, and everybody kind of takes turns telling something about their life using the technology in an environment that's fun, that has a safety net with you there. But instead of you going through 8 pages of a PowerPoint showing what the buttons on a touch panel do, you do something like that with the stakeholders. Everybody gets to use, touch, and feel the system. And then the next time there's a meeting, if somebody forgets something, their first call isn't tech support. The first thing is, like, Bob in the room does remember which button did that because they've all done it, right? Like, they've all done it once. And now you've created a community of people that have used something in a fun way that they're not, like, watching their CEO look at them as they're trying to fumble through how to produce a slide or get the audio up. But instead, it's really kind of like a fun, you know, hands-on experience. And I thought, you know, how valuable could something like that be to actually getting people involved and in using something?
And how much more fun it is?
Yeah. I mean, at a core, you know, this kind of stuff can be fun. So, I mean, I've always tried to think of new ways of, like, how do we actually get people invested, involved, and interested in learning something new in the first place?
I love the idea of making them an active participant, right? And in that fun way, because technology, so often, I think the experience is often something that's done to you, not done with you, or can feel that way if you don't approach it right, right? And when you make people an active participant in that way and get them involved, yeah, they remember it more. And then it starts to unlock some interesting ideas. If you've got leadership and stakeholders who have gone through that and have used that technology in a fun way to explain things about themselves, all of a sudden they get over that first barrier, which is a tough barrier sometimes to get over. You've made them a participant, and what you're doing is training, even though they don't know it, right? And all of a sudden they're starting to adopt it in their minds and thinking, hey, what else could I do with this? Or I really like this meeting experience. I've got a board meeting going on. I'm going to have them over here to my, and we're going to go through the same thing, right? Because I learned a whole bunch about my colleagues, and all of a sudden they're not thinking about the technology so much. They're thinking about other people and how to get them to be active participants as well. I think that's I'm going to use that, Mark. I really like that.
So actually what's funny, Jody, what you said about that is in our training, like, so we have kind of like a template document that kind of our team goes through after a system or during, kind of like during a system build to build up to training. They go through this document that my wife had put together to identify the outcomes of training, et cetera, et cetera. But the document that the participants receive actually asks them to consciously consider and think of what other ways can I use this in relationship to my job, right? So it's interesting that you said that, because that's exactly where she was going with it as well. So the other thing I wanted to talk about too, actually, and what triggered me to bring Jody on was, as we were talking about kind of like the pandemic and how technology has changed and how video calling and virtual meetings and remote work has accelerated. I'm going to let Jody talk about it, because I just thought it was a really cool idea, but they launched kind of at the entry of the pandemic in our province and kind of Western Canada. They launched a really cool platform. And if you're familiar with like an AMA style, you'll understand where this is going to go. But Jody, why don't you talk about, this is what I love. I loved the concept of this. So why don't you talk about how you launched that AMA kind of open link Teams?
For sure. Yeah, I will remember that so clearly, right? Just because it was such a moment in time for all of us. So for us, the last full day in the office was Friday the 13th, March Friday the 13th, right? And it was, I remember we had a client coming in, someone I'd known for a long time, and I was really excited about it. So we had a morning meeting going on, and I couldn't make it because I was doing prep work. So I asked my team to do some brainstorming, because the writing's on the wall. We know that the some organizations had already decided to work from home. We knew we were going that direction. So I said, listen, can you brainstorm some ideas in which we can help people go through this, right? We've got this huge client community. We understand this technology, but they're not going to. So, you know, we already seen some of those work from home blogs. We're starting, you know, 5 hacks to work better from home. Those kind of things were already starting to come up. So I said, just put together a list. And, you know, we were trying to put ourselves in the shoes of someone's life who's going to be disrupted, right? Like they're going to be doing something completely differently. And we realized that the tools that they were going to need to learn were tools that we had been using for years. So we do have some expertise here. And, you know, every office has that person on the floor who's just inherently kind of tech savvy. They're the ones you ask for help when you need that Excel spreadsheet or that Word doc formatted a certain way. And what we realized is that we're going to be people are going to now be in a situation where they're relying on technology more than they ever had before. And now that tech savvy person that was on their floor that they're nowhere in sight, right? They're not gonna be able to just look over the
yeah, they're at home.
Yeah, they're at home. They're by themselves. Yeah. They gotta figure this out on their own or Google it. So that was it. We kind of realized that, hey, we could be like our team could be that person. So the following Monday, we went back to the office just to collect our things. I put everybody in the boardroom and we're like everybody else. Like I was anxious. At that time, I was a little bit scared. I wasn't sure what's going to happen. And one of the things that always helps me when I get feeling that way is like, if you can help somebody else, it kind of you forget about your own problems when you're helping somebody else. And that was part of the message to the team is like, look, we need to help other people through this. And how are we going to do that? And what we decided to do was two things. One was on our website, we would set up a bookings page. Basically, that was like an ask an expert. So you could actually book time with us in 30-minute increments to go over things and understand, you know, like, hey, I've got this question. But we also set up a Teams meeting. It was a perpetual Teams meeting, open link, posted on our website. Come one, come all, ask us your questions. And we just, all of us, we're on that AMA, right? We called it an AMA, Ask Me Anything. And the idea was, if you are a client or even not a client, we'll help you, you know, go through that Teams meeting. We'll practice with you, you know, because now you're working with your team virtually, or we'll help you figure out how to share something from OneDrive, or, you know, it was fairly Microsoft 365 centric. And I was amazed at some of the things we were able to resolve for people, because we get it, what it is, but people were still coming in with something was broken. And I was blown away by how my team could actually fix some of their, you know, VPN issues or other things that weren't in that Office 365 suite. And it also became a bit of a meeting place for my team as well and other members of the team, because again, we're now split up. So this AMA became a bit of a hub for our team to, and we kind of supported each other through it, through those first few weeks. And that AMA has been really successful, maybe not in the way we thought it would be, right? But it's been really, really interesting as we've observed what this service has become, especially from a managed service provider. This whole technology experience and enablement, we were struggling with what that looked like as a service, right? Because we were doing a lot of it as a project. We come in and we do this initiative and had a beginning and an end. And what we know about technology, there's really no end to learning technology, but we are struggling to just make that jump from a project to a service. And I think that this whole situation really, and generating that part of our service really helped us to make that leap. It's been neat. Last week I went through with my team and we were trying to understand what makes this service different from some of our other business units, because we do service desk, right? We do desk side support, and we do it in a world-class way. And that's a hard thing to do, because there are KPIs that are associated with that. There are metrics, there are service levels that we got to stick to. Like, it is bang, bang, bang. You've got to know your stuff. And what we had just created was not that, right? It was something completely different. It was non-technical folks on a video camera when you came into this Teams meeting and just, hey, how was your weekend? What's going on? And then spending time. We've had some of those calls go hours to just help somebody through something. We're not rushing you out. People are apologizing to us. I'm sorry I'm taking so long. It's like, hey, if you leave, I'm here by myself. So let's just go through this. And yeah, it was really, really interesting exercise for me to go through that with the team and understand what that was. And one of the big things was that active participant mark, is that people were a part of their own solution, because we don't have admin rights to their computer or to their network. We just want to see what they're doing. Ask, you know, why are you doing it this way? Who else are you working with? What's going on here? Give me some context. Okay, what are you trying to achieve? Absolutely. And then we work with them to go through it. So they become part of the solution, and their eyes light up when they realize, like, they've had the tools at their fingertips this whole time. They just needed somebody to show them how to unlock that. And all of a sudden they're genuinely excited about technology, right? It's just a world of change that you can have just in a small interaction like that. So it's been a lot of fun. This year has been tough for all of us, but I am really proud of what we were able to accomplish through that little initiative. It's been pretty successful.
That's really cool. Number one, I thank you for defining the AMA acronym, the Ask Me Anything, because—
Mark was Googling it.
No, I wasn't Googling it, but the only one I know is against medical advice. So I didn't know if this was something your doctor had advised your team not to do based on the potential health impacts to your team of opening up a public Teams room for technology questions. Now, I love that idea of having people come in. The other thing that I'm very confused about, though, Jared and Jody, is Jody kept saying something like managed services. He wasn't talking about like a box that they sell, like a black box that you sell at 50 points GP that you have a private dealership with that nobody can shop online. Like, what kind of technology business is this, Jody, where you sell software and services and it's not attached to a black anchor, like a black boat anchor with a logo on it that says Tron of some kind?
It's a little different. And sometimes I wish I had that, because it would be simpler to explain, right? Something like what, you know, like we just went through and I explained the AMA, but to do that with a client is kind of, they're looking at you like, what is it exactly? Because we're used to the more traditional service desk and you're trying to explain them. It's like, no, there's somebody to help, but this isn't service desk. You almost have to experience experience it. So sometimes that's been the best way, is just to like send them the link and go into the AMA yourself and have them click it. And then you're there with a few people and be like, this is what it is. If you've got a question, let us know. Every once in a while, having the black box might make it easier, but yeah, it's an experience for sure. It is different.
Well, and I think that the way that you, however you proceed with your open Teams link or kind of that service that you created that was birthed last year, however you guys proceed with that, I think the key factor to it is, when I think about it, and I think about like our own service ticket system, and I get it. Like, I know we get pushback sometimes on our service ticket system, and I think people have to understand there is a method to having to track service and, you know, watch for patterns and kind of keep a tab on things. But I think what your service provided was almost like a harmless, natural, innocent way of just asking someone for help. Right? Because I think when you push people through, and we're guilty of it too, and I'm sure you guys have a ticketing system as well for your help desk, and we're guilty of it too, that when you force people to have to go through issuing and submitting a service ticket, and you do it for good reason, it's not for malicious intent by any means, it changes the vibe of relationship a little bit, you know, like it puts that relationship back in check of, you are a purchaser and I am a provider. And so you are going to purchase whatever's on the other side of this ticket, you know? Whereas the method, if you could find a way to wrap that into, you know, a monetary gain, in the sense that you still run a business, you have to pay people that work the desk and are available. But if you could wrap that same natural flow of asking for help into that and make it comfortable and understandable for anybody, I think like that's a huge win. It's so natural for people to just pop in and go, hey, how do you, you know, similar to, I like the analogy you gave of having that person on the floor where, hey, Jody, how do I do this? Right. And then you hit the nail on the head. Well, come COVID, that guy wasn't there anymore. He was living his life back in his house because he knew how to do everything. Also, meanwhile, these 10 people are struggling to share a file, yeah, or whatever, you know. So I like that. It makes me think, it certainly makes me rethink how we integrate service and how we provide service and how we could naturalize it a bit more. And yeah, I really liked that program.
Well, I think, go ahead. No, I was going to say the other thing I was going to tag on about something, you know, just to continue to compliment Jody on his open hours. I think the other thing here that's very important is that, you know, sometimes people don't know how to articulate exactly what they want to ask how to do. And filling out a ticket in a formal way can be a little intimidating because you're documenting something. And in some way, you may feel like you're documenting your own ignorance or your own stupidity. You know, it's hard, yeah, to sit down and write, like, how do I formally even ask this question in a help desk situation? Somebody's going to read this. My boss may get a copy of it. Like, there's a lot of psychological, you know, impact to doing something like that. Whereas, you know, the barrier to entry and kind of the comfort level of just like, hey, I'm just going to go on and just say, hey, like, I like Teams, but I really wish like it worked more like this. And then somebody go, oh, well, have you used these three features? And they go, no, I didn't know those were there. The informality of that and the casualness of it, I think really helps people to lower their guard and really kind of, like you said, Jody, unlock their own success, right? Like, the keys are there. The keys are right there. They just don't know which one goes in which lock, right? And that's all you're really helping them do. And I like that idea of having something that's less formal. The help desk system to me, I mean, hey, my computer won't boot, or every time my camera boots, my focus won't work. Why is that happening? Right? Like, filling something out like that, I think is something that, now you have an SLA, now you have a known problem. How do you create an SLA for, I really don't like Teams too much. Like, how do you create an SLA for that anyway? So like, having this other alternate way to do some of those problems that may be more amorphous and less,
you know,
well-defined is really cool.
You know what it actually brings up, Mark, is something you've said before about how we've talked about a lot about how people think that that this is like the new normal, and this is the new normal. And I argue that, you know, it is the new normal, but it's not, you know, the new natural. And the thing you brought up about that is the lack of ad hoc and impromptu meetings that occur in an office space where you brainstorm and you spitball with someone that you run into at the coffee station, or you run into it in the stationery room or in the back shop or whatever. All that conversation is lost now because everything has to be scheduled. And it sounds like what Jody actually brought it, and this is where my tie-in comes, his team almost brought back that ability to have those ad hoc and impromptu conversations, right? Because it's not scheduled. You literally could just jump into this link. Someone's there, like as if you were at the coffee machine, and say, hey, you know what? I'm working on this file. You ever done that? Like, can you help me? Can you show me how that works? And so it almost ties into what you've said, kind of this whole pandemic is like, you miss the run-ins and the brainstorming and the creativity that comes from just talking to someone that you're not going to schedule a meeting with for that day, you know? Like, so I bet you there's some value there in the ad hocnicity of it. That's a patent word.
That's a Hillmanism. Yeah. Hillmanism.
Trademark that. Absolutely. I totally agree with you. Like, you guys are bringing up things that I haven't thought of. I you know, you kind of get yourself into a way of thinking of things, and you've brought me new ideas and kind of different ways of thinking, which gets me really excited. So I'm glad this is being recorded, because I can go back and like, hey, you know what? Maybe there's a different way of thinking of these little elements of it, right? Because of, you know, we know that like that ad hoc component is important for them to just be able to come in. And the idea that we're not creating those tickets or like trying to rush them out is definitely something that we've thought about. But how do we, you know, how do we help to understand how that continues to impact people? And I think too, it's like it's also the people that we have on the other end of that call. Because if you're a non-technical person who's coming in and saying, like Mark said, you may not know how to word that email. So you come in and you're asking someone, and you know what, the person on the other end, and it's video, which I also think is impactful. So there's a connection there. But the other person has that empathy there, because, hey, you know what, I went through this exact same thing, right? It's like, oh, I had to figure this out. It took me half a day. I'm going to save you half a day and a bunch of Googling. We'll go through this together and I'll figure it out. And I think that those walls come down a little bit, and that you're talking to someone who's one of you, right? And I think that that's really important as well. And so because we come from that position of empathy, we're not only trying to help you through it, but we're also trying to recognize, like, is there something more that's going on here? Like, is there something else or a bigger problem? And we've uncovered those. And those have been some of the biggest wins that we've found. Like, we had somebody come in who was having a problem with her Outlook. And essentially the idea was that she was an adjuster. And when there were claims on RVs, the inspectors on site were taking photos of all of the mouse poop that was all over the RV, right? But they would send hundreds of photos and they would embed them in the email body. So I don't know if you've ever tried to take a photo out of an email body, but you cannot drag
nightmare. And drop. It's a nightmare.
You got to right click it, copy, paste it. And what she was trying to do is get them into the insurance system so that she could add them to the claim. Well, there's hundreds of photos in there, and she's right click, copy it over to a file, right click, and then paste them all when she's done, taking her like 40 minutes. And she came in, she said, is there an easier way to do this? And I actually didn't have the answer, but I got back to her in 10 minutes. It was James who had the answer. And we got back to her and we're like, look, this is how you do it. And we could get it down to about a 1 minute process. So it went from 40 minutes to 1 minute. And she's like, this is fantastic. She's like, we're all having this issue. And it's like, whoa, who's we all? She's like, well, there's 300 adjusters here and we're all having this problem. So we're like, okay, this is a bigger problem here. What we did is we cut a video and said, this is how you do it. We went to the manager, let them know what we were trying to do. We put it in a system where we could actually record the feedback. So we put it in we use Brainstorm. It's a system that we use for like a training for LMS, but you can put custom content in there. We emailed it to all of the adjusters, said basically, watch this 2-minute video and it'll save you 10 minutes a day. Well, what we found was, is it's saving them way more than 10 minutes a day. We could track who watched it, but at the end we asked them how much time it would save them and any comments that they wanted to make. So two questions, 2 minute video, then two questions. And the people that filled that out, we realized that we were saving them closer to 20 minutes a day. The daily savings, which we could measure, was 3,700 minutes a day across 300 adjusters. And all because one person came in today and made to ask how she could get her photos out of Outlook easier, right? So there's these interesting things that we can do. We're not afraid to kind of dive in and go beyond just resolving the ticket. We're kind of also looking for those types of opportunities.
Yeah, I love that. The video piece, I think so many people should embrace video right now. And I just wrote something yesterday about how every business should be looking at building a studio in their, you know, some type of recording video studio in their office, whether it's a small one room 10 by 10 that used to be a huddle room that you can't put six people in anymore, or whether it's something more major like The Mandalorian, but that everybody should be building some type of studio in their office, because we have these problems that are at scale out in the space. You know, we are more, you know, physically distanced than we were before. But I had the same thing. We had a customer where it wasn't even a customer. It was somebody that we hope to be a customer someday, who the technology question had nothing to do with what we do. It really just had to do with some frustration they were having in their home office. And so instead of me creating a one-to-one event with this person, who didn't have time for me anyway, I did exactly what you talked about, Jody. I knew a lot of other people were probably facing the same thing. I put my five pieces of advice in a video, did it quick ad hoc. Yeah. In fact, I recorded it in Zoom. I just went to Zoom, started a meeting for myself, recorded it, said, hey, these are five ways you can handle this problem if you're having it at home. Sent it to him, and then, you know, threw it up on LinkedIn as well. And the amount of people, you know, that you're able to now start to touch and reach, you know, you really start helping people connect dots. And if companies aren't embracing video as a way to scale, I mean, your example is perfect. Those 300 one-to-one meetings would have taken a lot of time. Not that you wouldn't have spent it if you had to, but being able to make the video, do it one more time with the video and then distribute it probably took you, you know, 1/100th of the time, right? Like 1% of the time it would take you to do 300 more meetings. So,
and it's rewatchable for those people too. Like,
yeah,
they don't have to raise their hand and go, sorry, can you repeat what you just said, and put themselves out there, right? They just hit play again, you know? So here's a question for the two of you that kind of spawned on me. We'll play some would you rather. So would you rather, and it's interesting because it came from Jody's team. So, would you rather teach empathy to a like type A strong technical engineer, or would you rather teach technical to a empathetic people person? I don't know what type of person that would be. Type C, type what? I always understood what a type A person is, but what do you call someone that's not, if you're not type A, what are you? Anyways, would you rather teach empathy or technical skill? What do you think is, and why?
I'll go first, because I'll let, then that gives Jody a chance to dump on what I say, which is good. that way I'm not dropping the hammer. We'll let him run anchor.
And I also want to be clear. I'm not saying that they're discrete of each other. You can't have both in either format. I'm just saying, as a leader or manager in an organization, like, would you rather have to teach someone technical skills or empathy skills?
I will tell you, I would rather teach the technical skill to someone with high EQ than try to teach empathy to someone who has a broad knowledge base. And the reason being is, I believe there are things you can do to have more empathy, but I find that EQ skills, emotional skills, emotional, you know, quotient, I think that's much more of a natural thing that people have in certain ways, depending on, you know, how they think, how they were brought up, how, you know, I think there are a lot of things that go into that. I think it's much harder to teach empathy than it is to teach technology. So I'd take the easy one. That's why I would do that.
Mark, I completely agree. Yeah, I even just from my own personal viewpoint, like in the experience that I have, there's room for both. We have some amazing technically skilled sure. people in our organization, and they are great at what they do, right? And from what I do, I look at things just a little bit differently than they do, right? Like I do see things as a people problem and not a technology problem. And it's just a different perspective, right? So if you ask that person what they would rather teach, they might have a different answer. But just because from my personal perspective, absolutely. When I look at my team, that is one consistent thing that we have right across our team is that EQ, that emotional quotient. They have that built in. And the tech part of it, we're continuing to learn, right? Sometimes it is a challenge, is like we just don't have that some of that background or some of that experience. But I do feel like that's something that's easier to be taught than the EQ side of things. So I agree with Mark. What about you, Jared? You asked the question. We're not going to let you off the hook.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think I agree with both of you. I think it's because the technical skills are tangible. You know, there is an A plus B equals C thing. You can teach that. And you see that in school as well, right? I mean, even in our education system, everything you learn is typically on the strong side of this is a tangible result. This is a history. This is a fact. This happened. And they do try along the way to encourage things like, you know, empathy, critical thinking, decision-making, you know, things like that. But there isn't really a way for them to actually sit down and go, okay, kids, I'm going to teach you how to empathize with someone today, you know? And so I'm with you guys. I think it is difficult for people that are very strong technical mindsets. Like you said, Jody, I think it's hard for them not to look at the what of the problem, you know, like it's hard for, like you said, you could have, like in the story that you shared, you could have just said to that person, oh, well, that's no problem. Save it in this OneDrive folder, share that folder with everyone. And then you can just drag and drop all those pictures out, done. And carried on about your business. But I think it was because of that EQ and that people-minded thought pattern you have, you said, well, this is a way to solve it, but is there more of an issue here? You picked up on, man, this will fix everything for everybody. Wait, who's everybody, you know? And so I think you're right. I think it's just two different mindsets, not one fall with the other. Just, I think you want to properly position people that think in either pattern to make sure they're successful. So,
well, yeah. I think this goes back to something too, Jared, that you talked about earlier. You know, when you were talking about the way that your wife came in and put some learning objectives and goals to training and things like that. I had a severe miss on this exact topic in 2005, which this, you know, this experience would now be driving. So 2005 is 16 years old at this point, which I hate to say, but in 2005, I had a big miss. And I remember it specifically because it had to deal with this issue. And it was, you know, my boss, the president of the AV company I was working at, asked me to give a training to the other salespeople. And instead of me asking her what she wanted me to train them on, I put together 2 hours of everything I thought I needed to teach. And that, like how you do a system design, what the difference between the audio systems are, what our good, better, best options are, like how our home automation systems work, and you know, why you need a RS-485 adapter to talk to a thermometer versus, you know, blah, 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 blah. So I went through this whole thing of how I would, you know, go through this technical process of helping a customer get what they need in their home. And I got to the end of all of this and she looks at me, the president, and says, that's not what I wanted you to do. So 2 hours. Not stop 5 minutes. And Mark, I think you're going down the wrong path here. Let's switch things up a little bit. After I've finished, Mark, this
things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday.
Yes. And yeah. So I'm like, you know, on me, I didn't ask what her intent was. And I said, well, Maggie, what did I miss? Like, what would you like me to add or what would you like me to do? And she said, Well, Mark, my office is upstairs from the showroom, and I hear you every time a customer comes in, and within about 5-6 minutes, their kids, and you know like what ages they are, and you know how they use the house, and you know if the husband entertains at home, and you know this and you know that, and you know all those things. And then all of a sudden you use those things to really make sure that you're putting the right things in the house. Teach them how to do that. And yeah. I'm like, you know what? Like, I don't know that I know how to teach somebody how to do that. Like, I don't know how to teach somebody how to develop quick rapport with the customer in a way that they'll open up private parts of their life to me as someone they met 5 minutes ago and tell me things about that maybe even like other people in their life don't know that are closer to them. You know, like, I don't know exactly how to break that down. I know there's a method to it. I'm not saying there's not. But on the fly, it was really hard to do. So it's funny that you asked that question, because I was asked to give a training. My boss saw it as more of an EQ training. I saw it more of a technical training. And I took the easy path and tried to teach the technology. And then they tried to have me teach the empathy at the end, which was really hard to do. So.
Well, Mark, we're coming up on our time, and we know what people do to us if we draw it out. So we got to do a hard stop.
I know.
This is a great conversation though.
This was awesome. Jared, you know what? Okay. I gave you a B+ on your first opening and introduction. I give you an A for effort on getting a guest, but I am giving you A+ on the guest today.
Yeah.
And based on this, your overall score is an A today. And I give you permission in leeway to book more guests and do more openings in the future.
I'm now promoted to assistant to the co-host.
Yes. Assistant to, yes, exactly. First assistant to the host.
Assistant to the primary host.
This has been a ton of fun for me, you guys. This is my first podcast that I've, and just an awesome conversation. I feel like I was in an advantage. I was able to listen to a couple of previous episodes, and so I got to know you guys a little bit through that. But this has been fantastic. I appreciate you having me on, and look forward to hearing more conversations from you guys in the future.
No, we appreciate you coming on, and what great work you guys are doing over there at WBM, and really thinking about, you know, people and adoption and all of those things on top of the service level agreements and the technical piece. And we talked about the EQ and the technical. I think you found a way to combine the two. I mean, you have the technical KPIs and metrics and SLAs that you have to meet, and then you've created this other way to really connect on a personal level as well, which is amazing.
Yep.
All right. You want to close, Jared? You want to tell everybody thank you for joining us?
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in on this fine Wednesday morning, or whenever it is you're listening to this show. And this is Mark and Jared out. Thank you.
Take care, all.